another episode of Two Strike Noise, your fourth, maybe fifth favorite baseball history podcast. My name is Jeff. I am one half of the show. Joining me, as always, from the Northwest is the other part of the show. That is Mr. Mark A. Johnston. Mark, how you doing?
Hey, Jeff. I'm a little busy. I can't really talk right now.
Oh, well, it'll be our highest rated episode ever.
Okay, hold on. Let me put down the chainsaw. Okay. Hey, it's good to be back. I'm ready to talk about baseball and enjoy your company, Jeff.
You're the only one. But hey, it's regular season. The regular season has started.
It has. It was 3 in the morning. I watched both games live.
Oh, geez, I did not. I watched them, then I just got up and watched them on MLB.TV when I was up.
That's probably the smart thing to do. But I don't really sleep, so, you know, might as well.
Start the season and then wait another whole week until there's any other regular season games.
And the Padres, I'm not sure about the Dodgers, but I know the Padres have some exhibition games against the Mariners.
Yeah, they do. They both come back and play some more exhibition spring training games, which
that's
is gotta
always be a weird feeling.
Always weird. But at this time next week, Mark, we'll be watching full slates of regular season games. So that's exciting.
Yes, very exciting.
Yeah. So last preseason episode for us. So let's get right into it. First of all, let's get out there and get warm because we're old. We can go out there and take some BP and we've got some stuff. So Mark, in my spare time, which has not been a whole lot this week, but I have been plowing through the internet looking for content. I found some things. One that I can't believe I've never seen before. But I have not seen this before, and I did not know about it until I was playing MLB The Show 24 came out last week. And so I've been playing through that. First of all, if you play that game, you will see me in that video game.
Really?
I am in, just like I'm in the Hall of Fame. There's some footage in the Derek Jeter storyline, which I know you're not going to like it, but the Derek Jeter storyline is really a lot of fun, and it's really cool. But there is some footage of him at the All-Star game in Atlanta at Turner Field.
And there you go.
Yeah, there's a shot from center field, and there I am back there in that camera well. So I've made my video game debut, I guess. But there is, during the Derek Jeter storyline, there's also little mini storylines about other members of the Core Four, one of which is Jorge Posada. And one of the highlights that they showed during his little clip is something I had never seen before, and it's really incredible. So here, I pulled up the clip here. It loses a little bit since you can't see it so much, but you can hear what's going on.
Hasn't seen his team take a beating like this on the road.
Still six outs to go. Sean pops it up. He ran right into
the catcher. What a catch!
And what a,
did you see that?
A play by Jorge Posada with his bare hands.
That was unbelievable.
Baseball.
Figgins backed him off. They got tangled up. Jorge Posada dropped his glove and he made a catch barehanded. I've never seen that before. Look at that. Jorge saying, hey, look, he knocked my glove off. The inning's over, George.
And we just did that last out. Watch Figgins. He gets off balance. Okay, he's watching now. He loses his balance and runs right into Jorge Posada. Okay, watch Posada's glove. It comes off right there. He did it. Sean didn't do that. He knocked his own glove off, but he makes the catch barehanded. Watch now. Watch Posada. Watch him. He's tangled up there, but it falls off and he makes the catch. Now Posada is arguing with C.B. Buckner saying, now look, that ain't right. Why's a man got to make a play like that without his mitt?
So a lot of our favorites there, Sean Figgins and C.B. Buckner involved.
Nice.
But so what happens? This is from September 29th, 2010. This is at the Angels. Sean Figgins is up. He whops straight up, literally about to come down on home plate. So Posada tossed the mask and Figgins just looks up to see where it goes. And he kind of stumbles around and happens to back into Posada. But as soon as he feels Posada, he like tries to wrap his arms around him like he's feigning, like, oh, you're gonna fall, I'm trying to protect you. But no, he's really trying to screw him up so he doesn't make the catch. But Posada's catching glove comes it's knocked askew a little bit during that, and then when he tries to get free of Figgins, his glove falls off and he catches it barehanded. Which I've never seen this highlight before. I would have thought that would have been all over every video from that year.
Yeah, you would think.
But I had never seen that before.
That's a unique play. You would think that would have been batted around almost as much as Ichiro's throw to third.
Yeah, I mean, how often does a baseball player catch something barehanded?
Right.
I mean, besides Kevin Mitchell.
Kevin Mitchell misjudging a fly ball and catching it barehanded, forever making highlight reels.
Yeah, there was no misjudgment here. This is a great play by Posada, which, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm really surprised I had not seen that before. But, so this led me down more rabbit holes of YouTube videos. I found a new treasure trove of old games. They're like complete games, 3-hour broadcast, which, you know, I was going cherry picking the ones that Ricky was in. A lot of these have pregame shows. And one of them was the NBC Game of the Week. You and I, we've talked about NBC Game of the Week. That's really
absolutely
the only way we got to see. I mean, you got to see the Mariners because you grew up in the Pacific Northwest. But I didn't have until later, NBC Game of the Week in Salt Lake City. That was all the Major League Baseball I got to see every week. And so there's a couple of them that have the pregame shows. And this clip I'm about to play for you, this is from 1989. So this is 30 plus, almost 35 years ago. And if you think boomers is a new thing now, this is, first of all, this is Gene Shalit, which you have to be of a certain age to know who Gene Shalit is, right?
Oh, I love Gene Shalit. He's got some of the best facial hair in the world.
Yeah. So in the 80s, I truly believe the only thing you needed to be a movie critic was a lot of curly hair and a big mustache and big glasses, of which he has all of. And he's wearing a bow tie, which was
that
another
helped,
one of his
definitely.
Things. Yeah. And he was a movie critic, right? Wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. So here he is in a pregame show for the Game of the Week. And this is what really grinds his gears to mix memes. This is boomers before boomers was a thing.
I want to hear rock music, I'll go to a concert. If I want to hear an organ, I'll go to church. When I go to a baseball game, I want to hear the crack of the bat, the ball off the wall. But baseball's owners inflict us with music, a raucous racket of rock. The cacophony at Yankee Stadium could bring back the dead, and the Yankees could use them. Often in Kansas City, the organist erupts not only between innings, but often between pitches. To him, life's a pitch. What we fans need is quiet, so we can reflect on what's happened and speculate on what may happen. That's one of the beauties of the game. Instead, organists bang away, pulling out all the stops. I wish they would come to a complete stop. Let's get rid of the organs. Let's pile them up and grind them up. And I hereby volunteer to be the organ grinder. Stop the music, play ball.
Okay, now, first of all, I agree with him. I hate organs.
It's part of the game.
Yeah, I mean, organs and barbershop quartets, those are my two hot points when it comes to music. I don't like organ music at any sporting event, but I'm all for the music being played. I like it. It's better. I mean, I'm an A's fan, so it's pretty quiet if there's no music, but boomer much there, Gene?
Just a little.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. You know, we have organ music at
Temple
Park, and the great Art Foonman used to play there.
Yeah, R.I.P. Art. We don't know if he's dead or not.
We just don't know where he is.
Yeah, he's just kind of disappeared. All right, let's see. Mark, we've gotten a lot of emails lately, and we really appreciate it. A lot of people chiming in on the new format for Wax Packs Heroes, which we're glad everyone likes that. I did get this from a listener that is in the UK. They said they enjoy the podcast. We appreciate it. Thank you very much. They're 32 years old. They've always just enjoyed baseball. They've never had a favorite team. And they want us to pick a favorite team for them. Part of the DM says they're a Tottenham Hotspurs football fan. So, you know, taste is not the greatest. But they want to be able to travel every year to come and watch their team. Probably come over for a homestand, which that's sounds like a blast. They would prefer one on the East Coast, but it's not essential, and it must be easy to travel to, which I think pretty much any major league team is going to be easy to get to. But they wanted some suggestions, Mark. This is something we take seriously. I mean, this is a lifelong commitment that they're going to
absolutely.
Be locked into.
This is, to be trusted with such an honor is pretty impressive.
And, you know, us being a Boston Red Sox history podcast.
So we've been told.
Many would assume that we would just go with the Red Sox, but I'm not going to suggest the Red Sox because I'm not going to say anything that's going to get Red Sox fans mad at me, but I have been thinking about this. I think there needs to be a little bit more information and consideration here, because this is, if you're going to seriously become a fan of a team, it's not something you just pick arbitrarily and then force yourself to like. There's got to be a connection, right?
Right, sure.
So, you know, Tottenham is a good premier team, football team. They've won, you know, I'm a Reds fan. I'm a Liverpool fan, so got a lot more titles under my belt. But my suggestion here was, if you want it to be on the East Coast, which I understand, just sticking to the East Coast, I would suggest somebody in probably the Northeast, because if you travel to somewhere like Florida or Atlanta in the summertime, you're going to be miserable most of the time because it's very, very humid. It gets humid in the north too, but not as humid.
Yeah, see, I've been giving it a lot of thought too, and I thought the same exact thing. So
yeah, let's rule out those teams. Now, if you've listened to this podcast before, you know my team is the Oakland A's. I might not have a team much longer.
We can pick one for you.
Well, see, that's the thing. My second team is the New York Mets. And I would suggest that would be a good choice. If you pick the Yankees or the Red Sox, I mean, everybody and their dog is a Yankees or Red Sox fan. They're easy. They spend a lot of money. They win a lot. The Mets, they spend a lot of money. They don't win. You're not a bandwagon fan. Also, there's the Blue Jays. You can go up there. It's not as humid. You got a dome. You got my favorite hockey team. I would suggest, you know, that's a possibility as well. This is what I would suggest, though. I would suggest watch a lot of games of these teams. One of the things I like about the Mets is their broadcast booth is the best in the business. It's entertaining. It's insightful. The Yankees also do have a great booth. They've got David Cone. They've got Paul O'Neill. I could give or take the Michael Kay, but you know, listen to the broadcast as well, because if you're watching this team all the time, that's part of your experience.
Yeah, no, that's something to take into consideration as well.
I don't think we can actually give you a team. We can give you suggestions and maybe check in with us throughout the year and we'll see how it's going.
I have a different suggestion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to give them a team that's probably going to be fun to watch. At least the more you watch them at this point, they've got a good shot at winning. They're young and they're talented. It's a good East Coast trip. Plus, from there, you could go visit other ballparks pretty easily. And I like their broadcast team because I like Jim Palmer so much. I was going to go with the Baltimore Orioles.
And they're going to be really good this year. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they're going to be good for the future.
Yeah. That's a good pick. Good stadium. Yeah. Well, let's check back in with them later in the year and just see how they're going. But there's some good suggestions right there to get you started. All right, Mark, this is show number 245.
Wow.
That's a lot of shows we've got, but we've been doing this facts of the show, having to do with whatever show number we're on. As I said, show number 245. Now, do you want to go first here, Mark? I know you've got a great fact here.
This prepared. Is digging pretty deep. One of my favorite catchers, Gold Glove winner Jody Davis.
Oh, Jody Davis? I thought you said Jody Reed earlier.
Oh, no, no, no.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I like Jody Reed.
Well, Jody Reed, yeah, 80 grade mustache for Jody Reed.
Yes. Okay, Jody Davis, though, had 3,585 at-bats and accumulated 877 hits for a career average of 245.
There you go. Those are the kind of deep dives that we do.
Yeah, I spent days figuring that out. I wanted to give Jody Davis a shout out. What can I say?
Okay. Well, I did remember the show fact before we started the recording this week. So mine, for show fact number 245, players weighing 245 pounds or more. Now, I think we did something similar to this a couple episodes back, and I said, well, there's our show fact for show 245, but I forgot what it was. So I don't know if this is what I said we were going to talk about, but I found this interesting. Of players weighing 245 pounds or more, single season totals for sacrifice hits, four of the top five single season totals records are held by one player. These are sack hits, not sack flies, sack hits. So think like a sacrifice bunt. Four of the top five seasons are held by none other than LeVon Hernandez.
Really?
Yeah.
He wouldn't have been. He was not on the tip of my tongue for the answer there.
No, but I mean, you know, he pitched in the National League a lot.
Oh, and yeah.
Was a good bunter.
Yeah. I'm not insulting him.
He's 1-4. He holds the record. Let's see. Twice he laid down 15 sacrifice bunts in a season. 2004 and then 7 years later in 2011, he likewise put down 15. Then he had two other seasons of 14 and 13.
Wow, so, did his job at the plate.
Yeah, good bunter. The fifth guy in that top five was Hyung-Jin Ryu, who is still pitching for the Dodgers. Yeah, the Dodgers.
Okay, so he's got a shot. Well, no, they don't really bat anymore. Never mind.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to.
Those records are in cement, my friend.
Yeah, so he had 12 in 2019, but he will obviously not do better than that. In sixth place is your guy, Aaron Hwarangtang.
Okay.
And then Livan Hernandez again. And then he's at 11. And he's on here. I think every year he pitched, he led the league in sacrifice hits for guys 245 or more. But there you go. All right.
That's an awesome stat. It's not as deep as mine.
I like to look. Next week, it's going to be players 246 or higher.
Oh, good.
Weight-wise.
That ought to knock off a few dozen.
Yeah, because, well, Hernandez is listed at 245, so he's going to be that's even off better. The list. Yeah. All right, trivia question. This is the final trivia question for the year, answer for the year, I should say. Let's see. Who are the only two pitchers in Major League history with 80 or more career wins whose first or last name are the same as an American city with at least 500,000 population? 500,000 inhabitants within the city limits. So let's see, Mark, I got a couple of guys that sent me some answers. What about you?
Yeah, I got a few answers. Rich V, he wishes he could have said Al Albuquerque just because it's a cool name. Yeah. But he said Jose Mesa. And Dallas Keuchel.
There you go. That's correct as well. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
So I also got a couple of responses, some of which were not correct. But our old friend Brian Krause, of course, comes in with the correct answers, Jose Mesa and Dallas Keuchel. But there is a third answer that he found that I was completely oblivious to. And that is Denny LeMaster.
Oh, really?
I've never heard of Denny LeMaster. Denny LeMaster went by Denny. His real name is Denver Clayton LeMaster.
Wow, that's a deep dive for you.
Yeah, he pitched from 1962 through 1972 for Atlanta, Houston, and Montreal. Overall, a 90 and a 105 mark. But there's the 90 wins. And last time I checked, Denver had a higher population than 500,000.
Yeah. That's good. That's very good.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
I did get an answer from Chris Cook and his dad, Tom.
Okay.
And they guessed, and these sound legit to me, Orlando Hernandez.
Oh, I think that might work.
And Reggie Cleveland.
Now, somebody else sent me Reggie Cleveland, and there was a reason why that didn't work. Well, let's see here. Orlando population, 309,000.
Their population doesn't count Disney World.
Yeah, it's tough here because city limits are something that are
okay.
Kind of wonky. Yeah, yeah. No, that's a really good answer. I did not even think of that. And then what was the other one?
Reggie Cleveland.
Because I thought Reggie Cleveland was a joke, kind of like when you say Steve Centerfield. but let's see, Cleveland is 367,000.
Okay.
Now I got to check Denver as well.
That's a good call.
713,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good guesses nonetheless.
Yeah, well, I got to check out. Yep, Mesa, 509,000. And then Dallas, Texas is 1.2 million.
Yeah, I figured they were above the limit.
Yeah, so it is three. It's Denver, LeMaster, Jose Mesa, and Dallas Keuchel. At least that we know of. I'd never heard of Denver, LeMaster. So thank you for that. Let's see here. Mark, this show is scheduled to debut on March 22nd. We're also recording it on March 22nd, so we'll see if that happens or not. But we have got our first debut of the year. So making
nice.
I'm excited about it. Let's see. Making his debut in 2014 on this day is Alex Guerrero. who made his debut with the Los Angeles Dodgers. So Alex Guerrero, I don't remember a whole lot about him. He is Cuban. He's from Cuba. Let's see. He made his major league debut today as a pinch hitter against the Diamondbacks. But he came up to pinch hit, and Kirk Gibson was the manager of the D-backs at that point, went out, made a pitching change, brought in a right-hander, to which the then-manager of the Dodgers, Don Mattingly, then pulled back Guerrero and set up a pinch hitter for him. But that was his first official AB. Well, not AB, his first official appearance. The next day, he got in a bat and struck out. This, I believe, we've talked about him before, because it features one of our favorite players of all time, Miguel Olivo. Which has got some inside jokes between you and I. But during a game in the minor leagues, they were playing in Salt Lake against the Bees in 2014. Guerrero and Olivo got in a scuffle in the Albuquerque dugout. They were teammates with the Albuquerque, what are they, the Albuquerque Chihuahuas? Or no, the Albuquerque Isotopes. That's what the El Paso Chihuahuas. The Albuquerque Isotopes.
Used to be the Dukes.
Yeah, way back.
Back when I was working.
Good uniforms. They got in a scuffle in the dugout, and Olivo went Mike Tyson and bit off a portion of Guerrero's ear.
Wow.
You got to be pretty upset to do that.
Man, that has to be painful.
Yeah, certainly does. Guerrero went on to spend 3 years in the, or 2 years in the big leagues with the Dodgers. Then he went and played in Japan for the Chunichi Dragons and the Yomiuri Giants. While he was at Chunichi, he broke a franchise record for most consecutive games with the home run. He went deep in 6 straight games. He fell short of equaling the NPB record of 7 consecutive games, which is held by both Randy Bass and Sadaharu Oh.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, so he had a good career. He played for, 5 years in Japan. So he was for a bit of time.
Well, here's an interesting fact. In Japan, biting off a portion of someone's ear is punishable by death.
I thought you were going to say it was a sign of respect. Or you're now in the Yakuza.
I don't think it is.
It's just like, okay, if you went in the Yakuza, you can either cut off the top part of your ring finger, or this guy can bite your ear off, part of your ear off. Then you're in.
Yeah, I've avoided both so far, but I mean, maybe I got some years left.
Yeah, well, if you want to join the Yakuza, now you know. All right, that's going to do it for our BP segment. Mark, let's get into this. This is a Tales from the Dugout show, which is something we do when we're busy during the week and don't have a lot of time to do a bunch of research. So this is a bunch of smaller, quicker stories that don't take up the whole time that we have allotted for the main segment. So, Mark, we each got a couple of them. I am going to go first. I want to go right back to Japan. I got a couple of NPB things here that I wanted to talk about. First of all, we've talked before about Herb Washington here from he played for my guys, Oakland, 74-75, appeared in 105 games, got a World Series ring, doesn't have a single plate appearance to his name. He was the pinch runner. I mean, that's all he did was came in, he pinch ran, overall 31 stolen bases, 17 caught stealing over really just a season and a quarter. He only played 13 games in 1975. He appeared in 92 in 1974, but we've talked about it because this was a really unique thing, something that Charlie Finley thought was going to revolutionize the game. Well, in 1969, so this is 5 years before Herb Washington, the Lotte Orions, who have now, they're the Chiba Lotte Marines, they signed Olympic sprinter Hideo Ijima, and he was exclusively a pinch runner for them. He had 0 plate appearances and 26 steals with the club over 3 seasons. Let's see, he, like Herb, really only played 2. He had 69 and 70. He had 10 stolen bases. He was caught 8 times. The next year, 12 stolen bases, caught 9 times. And then he only had 1 stolen base in 1971 for overall 23 stolen bases, 17 caught stealing. So I would say that that is definitely not a successful career.
Not a great investment.
No. I mean, Herb went 31 stolen bases and 17 caught, which is also not great. But, I mean, that's still better than Hideo here. Yeah, so it was not a first-time thing when Herb Washington was called on to be the designated runner. Also, I wanted to mention this. So we've talked about the Hanshin Tigers. They won the Japan Series last year, broke the curse of the Colonel, right? Big thing.
Yes, yes.
Well, remember the actual statue of the Colonel that they pulled out of the river after searching for it for all those years? And, you know, it's on it was on display and, you know, it's kind of a big folklore thing for them. And if you don't know what we're talking about, please go back, listen to the episode about the Hanshin Tigers and the curse of the Colonel. Well, that statue is no longer. Now that the Tigers have won Japan Series, KFC decided that the statue was too dilapidated and it was destroyed in a ceremonial doll burning ceremony at a temple.
Wow. That's a piece of history.
Now, I think this is pretty risky, if I'm being honest. Did they just incur another another curse? Is it going to be another 35 whatever years until they win again? And there's no way to recover this. They burnt it. It's just a pile of ash now. So say a prayer for the Hanshin Tigers that they have not cursed themselves yet again.
Yeah, that just sounds dangerous to me.
Why are you flirting? Just put it in a back room somewhere. I mean, don't. Yeah, whatever.
I would have held on to it for them.
Yeah, I mean, we would have definitely taken care of it here in the Two Strike Noise studio. Let's see, Mark. Well,
the future Two Strike Noise Museum. Well, it would have been a piece de resistance.
Yeah. Well, our Hall of Fame is opening. We're breaking ground for that very soon. So
very soon.
All right, Mark, you got something for us.
Yeah, I've been wanting to talk about this guy for a while. One, because he has an awesome name, and two, just because he's a cool story and a great player. Out of the Negro Leagues, Thomas Pee Wee Butts.
Sorry, I'm a 10-year-old.
Pee Wee Butts, 5'9", 145 pounds, considered absolutely one of the greatest shortstops in Negro League baseball history. Butts himself played for the Indianapolis ABCs, the Atlanta Black Crackers, Baltimore Elite Giants, Birmingham Black Barons, and Memphis Red Sox between the years of 1938 and 1954. He had an amazing season in 1940, hitting .391, which was pretty impressive because it was in the Negro National League, and that place was full of stars. So very impressive. Butts was a six-time Negro League All-Star, and he hit .308 in 44, .309 in 1945, .287 in 1946, and in 1947, he hit .321. It was told he was one of the slickest fielding, quickest, most accurate shortstops that ever played the game. When he was on Baltimore, he was teammates with Roy Campanella. And Campanella said, and I quote, "I'd compare Butts with Pee Wee Reese or Phil Rizzuto or anyone I've seen in the big leagues. Butts could do everything. He just didn't get the opportunity to go to the majors," which is so unfortunate because I bet this guy would be remembered pretty impressively. His manager in Baltimore, Lenny Pearson, in an interview said that Butts was absolutely heartbroken when Gilliam, that would be Junior Gilliam, he was a double play combination with Butts. Junior Gilliam got the call to the major leagues with the Brooklyn Dodgers and he did not. The quote is, "It broke Butts up. I thought Butts would make it big. He was tremendous. He was a tremendous shortstop and a pesky hitter, sprayed the ball everywhere." And in a different interview, Holway said, "Butts talked about his missed opportunity. If I'd been 10 years younger, I think I could have made the major leagues. My two roommates, Roy Campanella and Junior Gilliam, both went to the majors from Baltimore. I was glad to see them get the chance, but if the doors had opened a little earlier, I think I'd have done pretty good. I could have been up there too." So unfortunately, Pee Wee never got the chance to play in the big leagues, although it certainly sounds like he would have been a star if he had gotten the chance. And now, with the name Butts, he could have been in so many shows before if he had been more like of a big leaguer, more popular, or we had known about him. Because I just said the word Butts like 18 times.
And I muted myself because I laughed like 18 times. 18 now, times. Is he related at all to Seymour Butts?
No.
No.
No, but mentioning the Butts family, true story, my father swore up and down when he was in the Army that he had gone to a wedding and his buddy, his name was Harold Butts, but everybody called him Harry. And he was walking down the aisle. He was a groomsman, and he had a girl in each arm. And his buddy turned around and said, "Hey, look, here comes two girls with hairy butts." So there's a story from my father.
Was I.P. Freely the best man?
I don't believe so. But I and my father, unfortunately, has passed away, so I can't ask him. Now, one more piece of trivia. In the movie Dick and Gooch, Operation Trike Strike, I played a character named Harry Butts. So just thought I'd throw that in.
Wait, now, what's this movie again?
it's you haven't heard of it? It's incredibly popular.
No, I haven't. I assume if I look under highest box office, it's right under like Titanic and Jurassic Park.
I think we're tied with Jaws. Yeah, no, it was called Dick and Gooch. Dick was a private eye operative, and Gooch was his pet dachshund, and they could communicate telepathically.
Didn't Joey on Friends have a show that he was? It was a robot, I think. I think but so, they were yeah, just...
now that you mention it, but yeah, I played the villain Harry Butts and his brother Stinky. So
where can we stream this? Because we're going to have to watch
I'm this. Honestly not sure. It's on my IMDb somewhere, and maybe that has a link or something.
I'm going to search this thing down. We're going to have a watch along somehow.
Yeah, it's one of the great movies I've been in.
All right. Well, I'm going to try.
So there's a story about the Butts family.
All right, well, I'm going to go back to something that's a little bit more on par for what I usually talk about rather than Harry Butts. Let's talk a little bit of Seinfeld here. Let's see, you and our friend Mitch, we were texting about this because I had seen it and I was already busy taking notes. The New York Yankees are going to have George Costanza bobblehead night this year.
Oh, so, I saw that. Hey, I'm so excited.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking to decide what team you want, maybe the Yankees are it and you come for this bobblehead night. It's July 5th, the day after, well, if our listener is coming from the UK, they might, July 4th might be a little sensitive, might be too soon for them.
But, I think they've gotten over it.
I don't know. But so July 5th against the Red Sox. I mean, it's going to be a big game anyway. There'll be a lot of people there. George Costanza bobblehead. The stance of this bobblehead comes from the famous season 8 episode. It was titled The Abstinence, but I think everyone just refers to it as the contest, don't they?
Yes. Yes. That generally is what I hear it called.
Yeah, so if you don't know what it's about, we're not going to discuss it here, but a very cool, I guess. But here is the scene from which, and we've talked about this scene before, because it's George giving Derek Jeter and Bernie Williams some hints, and I remember this story because Bernie and Jeter flew into LA just a couple of days after they won the World Series to film this, but if you don't know what we're talking about, here's a quick reminder.
Guys, hitting is not about muscle. In simple physics, calculate the velocity V in relation to the trajectory T in which G, gravity, of course, remains a constant. It's not complicated.
Now, who are you again?
George Costanza, assistant to the traveling secretary.
So, of course, George, while he's abstaining, is super smart.
Yes.
And then he stops abstaining and he goes back to being Costanza. But there's Jeter and I was going to say Paul O'Neill, but there's Jeter and Bernie Williams. Now, this brings me to something else here. Pitcher Denny Nagel. You remember Denny Nagel?
Of course.
With the Pirates, I remember. And also, he was at Atlanta while I was there, so I think of him there a lot. Well, I found in one of these pregame shows that I was watching from all these other games, he was a bit of a Seinfeld fan and could do a pretty good impression of Kramer.
Pittsburgh's all-star pitcher Denny Nagel has been blowing them away all season with his imitations.
Kramer on Seinfeld. One of my favorite episodes of Kramer is when he's talking about he has to wear boxer shorts because his sperm count has been pretty low and he wants to carry on the Kramer legacy in the family. And so he's going nuts. Kramer, all he wears is jockeys and these boxers are driving nuts. So he kind of comes in one day and he does his little slide in like that, and he says, "I can't take it anymore, Jerry. I'm flipping, I'm flopping. My boys need a home, Jerry."
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad. So, Denny Nagel, thumbs up to you, my friend.
Very nice. What I'm going to talk about now is the complete opposite of what we've been discussing. Remember, we did a show on World War II baseball players who missed a portion of their career by fighting in World War II. And I was thinking about that episode, and I thought, what about World War I? You know, there had to have been some ball players who missed time for World War I. And in fact, I found out that there are a lot. So I'm just, because this is a good time to do it, I'm just going to talk about the Navy in World War I. We'll get to the other armed services later. But since this is it would be a whole show if I did everything. The Navy actually has a page about World War I, talking about how in Southeast Asia in 1916, teams from ships stationed from the Philippines to Shanghai gathered for a championship series that drew a crowd of more than 30,000. And many of the locals from these countries our sailors visited watched and picked up the game that way. So pretty interesting as far as I was concerned. Here's a quote from the Naval History and Heritage Command. By 1921, the Navy Department had come to realize more and more that live wire athletic ships not only stood high in morale and ship spirit, but the same ships that habitually won top sports honors usually carried off the prizes for gunnery, engineering, and navigation too. So there were actually more than 440 major and minor league players that fought in World War I. So obviously you can see why I can't talk about all of them, but I am going to talk about a few from the Navy. And you might have heard of these guys, Jock O'Conlon, Red Faber. How about Burley Grimes? Jock O'Conlon is an interesting story, actually. Harry Heilman. Mm-hmm. How about Rabbit Moranville? There you go.
Yep, we've talked about him.
Yep, and one of our show favorites, Rube Marquardt.
Marquardt?
Work. There we go, yes. Herb Pennock, Louis Santop, Chris Speaker, and Casey Stengel.
Wow, those are World War I.
Yes,
you just
Navy. Yeah, we'll talk about the other armed services later.
Yeah, we'll save that for maybe Memorial Day episode. But you don't hear about that very often.
No, you don't.
It's always World War II.
I just started thinking about it.
Yeah. Anybody from the French-Canadian War?
Yeah, the War of 1812. I don't think there's any ball players.
Yeah, the French-Canadian War wrapped up about 1763. So I was just wondering if maybe...
My guess is no.
No.
But I've been wrong before.
Okay. No, that's great. I never thought about World War I guys missing time.
Yeah, I started thinking about it because I read that Branch Rickey fought in World War I.
Hmm. Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, let's put that in our back pocket for later on this summer. We'll do a Memorial Day episode and talk about World War I guys.
That's a great idea.
All right. I think that's going to do it for the main segment of the show, Mark. It's time to head into the last part. The newly renovated part, but still the same theme song. This is going to be our last exhibition game. I think we've got the rules down. I think people are on board with it. This is going to be the last time that we're gonna be wearing the spring training uniforms when we take the field for that, because it's time for Wax Pack Hero. Wax Pack Hero, got all stars in his eyes. Wax Pack Hero. Gonna pull the Wax Pack Hero. All right, if you're new here, this is what we're doing. Wax Packs Heroes. We're opening up some Wax Packs, which is how he came up with the name. We're very clever. Let's see. This week, we are going to once again be using some Fleer cards. Same as last week. This is from 1988. What we're going to do is we're essentially playing war with war. We're each going to flip a card over here, and they're going to go head-to-head. We're going to look at the baseball reference war from the year of the packs, which is, like I said, 1988. Whoever has the highest war wins that round, but there's a couple of extra things that we're adding on here. If you want some extra points, any what we're just calling 80s baseball aesthetics in the card, that means you're showing stirrup and real sanitary socks. You got some big flip down sunglasses or science teacher glasses on there. You got a good mustache, eye black, really anything on the headular region, we're probably going to give you credit for. I think we gave credit for a helmet with no ear flaps last week. I mean, just the kind of things that we're used to seeing but aren't around as much anymore. You're going to get an extra tenth of a point for all of those. If it's a really good mustache, we could give you an extra 0.2 of a point if we really like it. But if you're wearing something like 2-in-1 stirrups, anti-80s, or if you're wearing like high tops and showing stirrup, that's a minus because that's ugly. You know, those kind of things. We can take away a tenth of a point. Any awards won that season, so that means Rookie of the Year, Cy Young, MVP, All-Star, or Gold Glove, extra half a point for each of those. If there's a Hall of Famer on the card, whether they're in focus or not, that's a whole extra point. If Ricky Henderson or Nolan Ryan show up in either pack, if Ricky Henderson shows up, I automatically win that round. If Nolan Ryan shows up, Mark wins that round. Pop culture references we can find, that's a half a point for each, unless it's Seinfeld, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, or The Simpsons. That's a whole extra point for each of those. And if they were suspended or mentioned in the Mitchell Report, that is a minus half a point, because that's bad news bears. All right, Mark, let's see. I've got a pack here in my left hand, a pack in my right hand of these Fleer cards. Which one would you like, my friend?
Since it's an exhibition game, I'm going to go ahead and go with the right.
Right. All right.
I mean, that makes no sense, even to me, but it sounded like something to say.
All right. And let us go at it. All right. I'm going to have you go first, because that's the way we do this. Your first card is pitcher. Oh, by the way, we're playing first 1-5, by the way, just in case you wanted to know how long we were not going to just keep going on indefinitely. You've got a pitcher for the Cardinals. It is Greg Matthews. I am unfamiliar with Greg Matthews off the top of my head, but he played for 5 years in the big leagues, 4 with the Cardinals, 1 with the Phillies. 1988 with St. Louis, he went 4-6 with a 4.24 ERA, 68 innings pitched, appeared in 13 games. 13 games started, 1 complete game. Not bad. 83 ERA plus, and that is a WAR of 0.2. There is nothing else on this card, though, that is going to help you out.
All right. Hey, it's a positive, so I'm happy.
It is, and we have not checked his pop culture references yet, so you never know.
Yeah, there are none, unless living in Buena Park counts as a pop culture reference.
Don't know where that is, so I'm going to say no. All right, so you've got Greg Matthews, and you're going up against one of your favorite players with the Houston Astros. It's Kevin Big Mouth Bass.
Oh, very nice.
I got a feeling I'm gonna win this round.
I think so, too.
Let's see, 14 years in the big leagues, 10 with the Astros and the Giants, Mets, Baltimore, and the Brewers in 1988. 157 games. He hit .255, .314 on base, 14 home runs, 72 RBIs, 31 stolen bases, 6 caught stealing. That's pretty good. And a 105 OPS plus, and that is good for a WAR of 2.2. He has got that Kevin Bass mustache, which is a 0.2 right off the bat right there. And he has got real stirrups on, so that'll be a 2.5.
I think he got this one, man.
Yeah, I think so, too. He was traded for Don Sutton at one point. Let's just for fun see if there's any pop culture reference. Cousin of James Lofton. We've talked about that before. Every time, I don't know, it shocks me when I read that. But yeah.
They're a very athletic family. He's got a niece named Jordan who is a fantastic athlete on her own and is a friend of mine.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yes.
I don't know if that's worthy of congratulations, but that's cool.
No, she's great. She, you know, the whole family is very nice. Just good people.
All right. Well, not good enough to give you the victory, though. I'm up 1-0. I like that. All right. Next, you have got pitcher here for the New York Yankees, Brad Arnsberg. I remember Brad Arnsberg. I don't know why I have to say his name like I'm a pirate.
But
Arnsberg. Let's see. 6 years in the big leagues, 3 with Texas, 2 with the Yankees, 1 with Cleveland. Bad news for you. He made his debut in 86, played again in 87, and then 1989, no major league stats whatsoever. Or I'm sorry, 1988. In fact, he didn't play at all. I'm wondering if he had like Tommy John surgery or something there. He did not play in the minors or anywhere, which is
too bad for me. But
yeah, because there's nothing. Well, I mean, I don't know. There's nothing on this card that is going to help you out point-wise. Wow, he was drafted first in the first round. I'm sorry, not first overall, but in the first round 4 times. First by the Cardinals, then the Orioles, then the Angels. Didn't sign with any of them. But then the Yankees picked him, and he signed with them. And he was later traded to the Rangers for Don Onslaught.
Oh, nice.
Let's see. Brad Arnsberg currently resides in Cave Creek, Arizona. That's about the extent.
But born in Seattle, Washington.
Oh, was he?
Throw that in.
Oh, nice. Also earned the save for Nolan Ryan's 300th career win.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so that's not pop culture, but a good note. All right, so you're at a big zero there for Brad Arnsberg. And I have got pitcher for the Seattle Mariners, Edwin Nunez.
Oh, I got a shot here.
Yeah, you really do. 13 years in the big leagues for Edwin Nunez. I would have never guessed that. But let's see, 7 with the Mariners, 2 with the A's and Tigers and Brewers, and then the Mets and the Tigers. 1988, he split time between the Mariners and the Mets. He went 2-4 with a 6.85 ERA and a 57 ERA plus. And altogether, that is good for a minus 1.3 WAR.
Wow. Way to go, Arnsberg.
Wow. What? Why would the Mets pick this guy up if he's that bad with the Mariners? Not going to get much better with anybody else. But
and he was a righty, too. That's interesting.
Yeah. Let's see. In his Wikipedia, the B.J. Surhoff incident. 93 doubleheader between the A's and the Brewers, bench-clearing brawl, second game. Nunez, who'd been in the A's clubhouse, returned to the field and punched Brewers catcher B.J. Surhoff, leaving him with a bloody mouth that required stitches. He was upset because Surhoff had shoved A's outfielder Scott Liddy.
Liddy.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. And Nunez, who had pitched in the first game of the day, admitted he was wrong to have punched Surhoff. I don't think that...
Well, good for him.
That doesn't count.
I believe Scott Liddy wore those high tops and stirrups.
Well, he would get a minus. Should we subtract that from your total?
No, don't do that. I want to stay at zero.
All right. All right, so that round is for you. Wow, this is going to be interesting. It's catcher versus catcher, and these cards look exactly the same. Except for, no, they look exactly, these two cards look exactly the same. They're both down in their catching position. They've got their hand that is not in the catcher's mitt is hanging between their legs, and they've got their catcher's mitt sticking straight towards the camera as they stare at it. Like, these are mirror images, except for different teams. So your catcher is Junior Ortiz. Junior, real name Adalberto Ortiz. So when it says full name, Adalberto Ortiz, but then on top it says Junior Ortiz, wouldn't that be his nickname then?
Yes.
But they don't list a nickname. When are we going to run Baseball Reference? Let's see.
I don't want that job.
Overall, 13 years in the big league, 7 with the Bucks, 2 with the Twins, Mets, and Cleveland, and 1 with Texas. He was a member of that 91 Twins team that won the World Series, so he's got a ring. 1988 with the Bucks, 49 games, hit 280, 336 on base, 2 home runs, 18 RBI, and a 108 OPS plus, which is good for a WAR of minus 0.3.
Nice.
He does have a beard and mustache, so that'll only be a minus 0.2 right off the bat there. He is wearing real stirrups as well, so that's good news for you. You're down to a minus 0.1. I just don't know if he's going to have much in the way of pop culture references.
Just a couple of notes. Ortiz was a light-hitting catcher with a stutter.
Well, now, come on. Why would they put that in there?
And he was known for having a strong sense of humor.
Well, sounds like we would enjoy him, but unless they are going to give us an example of that sense of humor, I cannot accept that.
That's a good point.
All right, so you end up with a negative 0.1. I have got catcher for the St. Louis Cardinals, Steve Lake. Let's see here. Steve Lake, 11 years in the big leagues, 5 with the Cubs, 4 with the Phillies, and 3 with the Cardinals. 1988 with St. Louis in only 36 games. He hit 278, 339 on base, 1 home run, 4 RBI, a 108 OPS plus, and a WAR of 0.5, and he's got a mustache that I dare say is definitely worth 0.2 of a point.
Nice.
It covers the entire real estate from the very bottom of the nostril to the upper lip and extends out down past the outside of the lips.
That's awesome.
If you threw this on Tom Selleck, except for the fact that it's a little bit lighter, you would not be able to tell the difference. So that is going to be a 0.7 for him. Once traded with Kurt Ford to the Phillies for Uncle Milt Thompson. I just got that reference, Uncle Milt Thompson.
Oh, you just got that?
Yeah, I just I've heard people say that before, and I just, okay. But no, I literally just got that, Uncle Milty. Best remembered for his 91 studio baseball card, which featured his pet bird, Ruffles. If I if I needed it, I would have taken points for that, because that is a classic baseball card.
It's sitting on his shoulder.
Yeah. Yep. All right, so I win that. I'm up 2-1. All right. Next, you're going to win this one. We'll make this one quick. You've got a Hall of Fame pitcher. I have got a non-Hall of Fame pitcher. For you, it is Burt Beholm by 11. He loves to fart, is what I've been told. So nice. Much. So, well, if you go to our podcast page, he's wearing a shirt that says, I heart farts on it. So I have to assume that he likes flatulence. Not my call, but
big flatulence fan.
Hall of Famer, 22 years, 11 with the Twins, 5 with Cleveland, 3 with Pittsburgh in California, and 2 with Texas. 1988, getting towards the end here. Let's see. With Minnesota, he went 10-17 to lead the league in losses.
Nice.
With a 5.43 ERA. Also led the league in earned runs given up and batters hit. I still don't think it's going to matter. 75 ERA plus, and that is good for a minus 0.7. But he is a Hall of Famer, so that'll be a 0.3. He's got a mustache and a beard, you know that. So that's going to be a positive 0.1. Let's see here.
There's some great references here, pop culture wise.
All right, well, before we get there, if you look at his transactions page, it is literally a wall of text. He wasn't traded a whole lot, but he was involved in trades that involved a whole lot of players. Well, let's see. Appeared as himself in the movie Taking Care of Business.
During a broadcast, Blylevin forgot the name of the movie and had to be reminded.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I couldn't tell you anything about Taking Care of Business.
Well, yeah, the one that really gets me, though, is Blylevin did not know his correct name until he was about to get married. He had thought all his life his given name was Rickalbert, R-I-K-A-A-L-B-E-R-T. He learned that his name actually was Rick, R-I-K, middle name Albert, Blylevin. And he only knew because he had to get a copy of his birth certificate. It's so awesome.
Oh, boy. Of course, the nickname, the Frying Dutchman. I just thought that was a play on the Flying Dutchman, but because he was such a prolific giver of a hot foot, now frying makes sense because he's like, wow, all these nicknames are coming to me now, right?
Yes.
I understand Uncle Milt Thompson, and also because of his proclivity to give hot feet. Do you call them hot feet or do you just call them hot foots?
Yeah, that's one for we got to talk to a teacher or something.
Well, the fire extinguisher in the team clubhouse said, in case of Blylevin pull. That's good. So you're up quite a bit. Let's see. That'll be a pop. You're at 0.9. It's not unsurmountable, but I've got pitcher for the Tigers, Mark Thurmond. Wasn't he the bad cop is it Rodney King trial?
I think you're thinking of Furman.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. All right. Close enough. Let's see. Mark Thurmond, 8 years in the big leagues, 4 with the Pods, and then Baltimore, Detroit, and San Francisco as well. 1988 with Baltimore, went 1-8. Ooh, I got a shot. 4.58 ERA, 74 innings, pitched 29 strikeouts, 86 ERA plus. And that is a WAR of minus 0.3. And there's really no point in going any further. You have tied it up at 2 apiece.
It's a barn burner, man.
Well, actually, I can already see how this one's going to go. So you have got a Major League Prospects card that's got two different players on it. So you get to pick whether you want James Reed with the Giants or Felix Fermin with the Bucks.
I think you got a better shot with Felix.
I think you do, too. I've heard of Felix Fermin. I have not heard of the other guy. And we know that Felix Fermin's got a nickname, the Cat.
Yes.
Fermin, 10 years in the big leagues, 5 with Cleveland, 2 with Pittsburgh and Seattle, and then 1 with the Cubs. 1988, 43 games, .276 average, .354 on base, no home runs, 2 RBI, 98 OPS plus, and a WAR of 0.3. He's got a mustache here, so that'll be a 0.4, which was your Blylevin total And I don't think it's going to go much further than that, to be honest.
Well, I'll take it.
Let's see. Fermin, of course, nicknamed El Gato. Felix the Cat. Quick reflexes.
Nice.
All right. So you're at point four. My card is pitcher for the California Angels. It is Kirk McCaskill. I think I might have this one.
Yeah. McCaskill was a pretty darn good pitcher.
Yeah. 12 years in the big league, 7 with the Angels, 5 with the White Sox. 1988, he went 8-6 with a 4.31 ERA, 146 innings, 98 strikeouts, only a 90 ERA plus, but he's a starter. That is a WAR of 0.8. Unless he was suspended, I think that's going to help me out there with a win. Hockey career highlights. McCaskill played center and right wing for the University of Vermont. And was a finalist for the Hobie Baker Award. That's like the best college hockey player. A team what? Captain, drafted overall fourth round by the Winnipeg Jets in 1981. Playing one season of professional hockey. Had 10 in that one season, 10 goals, 12 assists. Then retired after that one season and became a baseball player. Is inducted in the Vermont Sports Hall of Fame.
That's impressive. A two-sport athlete. We did not know that.
I did. Yeah, we did not know that. But I will take the win there. I'm up 3-2. Uh-oh. All right. Next, you've got, you're going to get points for this. These glasses and this mustache. Here with the Blue Jays third baseman, Rance Mullenix.
Always had a mustache.
And glasses. Let's see. Overall, 16 years in the big leagues, 11 with the Blue Jays, 3 with the Angels, 2 with the Royals. 1988, 119 games, hit 300. Wow. 395 on base. 12 wow. home runs, 48 RBI, and a 143 OPS plus. That is good for a 2.1 WAR, just right out of the chute. Plus, you've got those glasses and mustache. That'll be an extra 0.2. He was in the Wax Pack book, wasn't he? So I think that counts as a pop culture reference. He was named in 1984 Sports Illustrated's Dream Team as a utility infielder.
Oh, wow.
He had a great season there. All right, so that'll take you up to 2.8. And I have got pitcher for the Rangers, Dale Mohorishik. Basically, this guy's not going to beat Rance. Mohorcik.
Mohorcik, I think.
Mohorcik. I want to say he's a coach or something in baseball. I'm familiar with this name, not how to say it, obviously. But 5 years in the big leagues, 3 with Rangers, and then the Yankees and the Expos in 1988. He split time between the Rangers and the Yankees. Overall, went 4-8 with a 4.22 ERA and a 96 ERA plus. And overall, that is going to be a WAR of minus 0.3.
Ouch.
Yeah, so I think we can go ahead and give that to you. That'll tie us up at 3 apiece. Let's see. In 1987, game against the Brewers, was accused of doctoring the baseball, but umpires found no evidence of wrongdoing. After the game, he complained of a sore throat and was admitted to the hospital. When it was discovered he was suffering internal bleeding as a result of having Crohn's disease and taking a specific pain reliever.
Wow.
Now, Peter Gammons erroneously reported that this bleeding was caused because he had swallowed sandpaper. Come on, Pete. Peter's in the Hall of Fame, isn't he? Like,
well, he should be.
Well, that, I don't know now.
So bad.
That is
bad. He swallowed sandpaper. First, how would you do that? It's not going to go down well, easy.
I mean, obviously, it had to just be when a pitcher has sandpaper, if they're doctoring a baseball, it's just a little piece. It's still like the size of your thumbnail at most. It's not a whole sheet.
No, I understand. Whole sheet. Yeah, I understand that. I'm just saying the sandpaper is pretty rough. It'll be hard to get down the
Well, if you, I don't know. Let's try it out. I'll get you some sandpaper. Okay. You let me know how it goes.
Okay, yeah, you do that, man.
So you're at 3, and I'm at 3. So this one's one's a barn burner. All right, you have got outfielder for the Royals, Gary Thurman. Let's see, 9 years in the big leagues, Royals for 6, and then the Mets, Mariners, and Tigers. 1988 with the Royals, only appeared in 35 games, 167 average, 214 on base, no home runs, 2 RBI, 12 OPS plus. That is a WAR of minus 0.7. There is nothing on this card that is going to help you out. You've had better.
Yeah, that's rough.
First round draft pick by the Royals in 1983. And looks like he's still kicking around as a coach. Good for him. All right, I have got first baseman, outfielder here for the Giants, Mike Aldretti.
Mike, enough Aldretti.
Oh, I like it. Yeah. I'm not sure if Aldretti is on. I think he's on the A's coaching staff. He's either like the bench coach for Mark Kotze, I think. Let's see here. 10 years in the big leagues. Giants and A's for 3. Angels and Expos for 2. And then Padres, Cleveland, and New York. 1988 with the Giants. 139 games. Hit .267, .357 on base. 3 home runs, 50 RBI, and a 103 OPS+. And that is good for a 1.3 war. He's got some eye black on and no batting gloves.
Ooh.
So that'll be a 1.5. I wonder how he got his hands in shape to not wear batting gloves. Or do we want to know? Probably we don't want to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. He's the first base coach this year for the A's. All right.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
But good news for me, that is a win, and I am up 4-3. So one more, and I'm in. Let's see.
My back to the wall.
Yep. And you can use both hands on this one because you've got pitcher Ken Daly of the St. Louis Cardinals, one of those amphibious pitchers. Yeah. Now, we say that. We've talked about him in this before. This is a great card because he has got a glove on both hands that he's showing to the camera. That's putting this card aside. This is a good card. That is a great freaking card. Fleer, hats off to you. Let's see, 11 years in the big league, 7 with the Cardinals, 3 with Atlanta, 2 with the Blue Jays in 1988 in St. Louis, 2-7. But he had a 2.77 ERA. So not a good team, I'm going to assume. 127 ERA plus, and that is good for a war of 1.1. I'm trying to figure out how I can give you points for this picture. I don't know. Do we give points if it's just a out of the ordinary picture on the card?
Well, I mean, it could be. There's a card with a snake on it. There's a card with a bird on it.
Yeah.
Can we give points for those?
I think we should. Yeah. Let's go half a point. All right. Okay. So yeah, I'm going to give you half a point for that. So that takes you up to 1.6. First round draft pick by Atlanta in 1990. Traded to Atlanta with Mike Jorgensen for Ken Obergefell. He of the good hair. Boy, there is no mention of his ambidexterity in his Wikipedia page.
That's weird.
That's weak sauce. I'm going to have to edit this. All right. So you're at 1.6. I have got pitcher for the Minnesota Twins, Joe Niekro.
Uh-oh.
So let's see here. Joe Niekro, 22 years. 22 years in the big leagues.
22, wow.
Now, if this was him tossing an emery board, then I would give myself credit for that, but I don't think I can do that. Let's see. 1988 was his final year in the big leagues. He only appeared in 5 games. He went 1-1 with a 10.03 ERA. 11 2/3 innings. Only 2 wild pitches, though. In 11 innings, so not bad. 59 ERA plus, and that is a war of minus 0.4. He does have real stirrups on here, so that'll be a minus 0.3. Now, he is throwing a knuckleball in this picture. Do I get credit for that? I don't think I should get credit for that.
There's plenty of knuckleballers, not that many amphibians.
Plenty of knuckleballers.
In baseball card history.
In what world do you live in where... there are plenty of knuckleball pitchers.
I didn't say there's plenty of knuckleball pitchers currently, but if you look back through
through the life of baseball, there have been fewer knuckleballers than there were spitballers.
There were fewer ambidextrous pitchers than knuckleballers.
Well, yes, but that's comparing apples to oranges, I think.
No, it's more like comparing apples to pears.
I'm not going to win this one, am I? No. Let's see. Of course, there's the old emery board toss, which I think everybody's seen. Passed away in 2006 from brain aneurysm. And here we go. Appeared on Late Night with David Letterman wearing a carpenter's apron and carrying a power sander.
That's awesome.
Also has a bobblehead that has a nail file in the back pocket. Now, I think I'm going to have to get, I think I get pop culture points for that.
You got to.
So that goes from a minus 0.3. It's still not enough. You've won that round. I tried my best. All right, so it's 4-4, so this is it.
Winner take all.
Winner take all. You, somebody I tried to use in the grid the other day, but couldn't fit him in anywhere. Second baseman for the Red Sox, Marty Barrett.
Marty Grin and Barrett.
All right, let's see. Marty Barrett, 10 years, 9 with Boston, and then his final year with the Padres in 91. 1988, 150 games, hit .283, .330 on base, led the league with sacrifice bunts with 20. One home run, 65 RBI, and 85 OPS plus, and overall, that is a 0.7 war. He definitely has real stirrups on here, so that'll be a 0.8 right there. Let's see. First round draft pick of the Red Sox twice. Signed the second time, obviously.
Oh, they really liked him.
They did. Oh, he was involved in that longest ever minor league game between the Pawtucket Red Sox and the Red Wings from Rochester. 33 innings. Go back and listen to that episode if you forgot. Oh, he was replaced by Jody Reed. That's two Jody Reed mentions in this episode.
What are the odds?
That's pretty good. You know, obviously he was part of the Red Sox in 1986, so he didn't win a World Series. But so it looks like you're going to be at 0.8, and you are going up against middle reliever for the Phillies, Todd Frohwer. I mean, if he had a good year in 87, then I might have a shot, but I'm not sure Todd Froworth's going to get me a whole lot. 9 years in the big leagues, 4 with the Phillies, 3 with the Orioles, and then the Red Sox and the Angels. 1988, he went 1-2 with an 8.2 ERA, 12 innings pitched, a 45 ERA plus, and a WAR of minus 0.5.
Nice. So
I answered my own question there just by reading his stats. Oh, wow, he passed away in 2017 from cancer. I did not know that.
That's sad.
All right, so congratulations, Mark. You have won the final exhibition game here.
We like that. We're going into the regular season on a positive note.
On a high.
Yes.
All right, so that's going to do it for Wax Packs Heroes. It's going to do it for this episode as well. Thank you all for listening. If you want more of us, find us anywhere on the socials. We're at Two Strike Noise. That is at TWO Strike Noise. And we also have the email address that Mark is going to hand out in a handwritten note to each and every one of you after he tells you verbally.
You know, I totally forgot it. I'm just kidding. It's Two Strike Noise. That's a surprise. TWOStrikeNoise@gmail.com. Feel free to write to us. We didn't have a trivia question this week, but just write to us. Let us know what you thought of the episode or if you want to see a picture of Jeff.
I think people are more interested in you.
You can see me. I'm on the internet.
Well, I'm in the witness protection program, so let's not.
Better not do that.
I guess I shouldn't have said that. We'll make sure to edit that out. All right, everybody, thank you again for listening. We'll see you next week on our first regular season edition of the year, the next episode of Two Strike Noise.
Thank you. God bless you. Have a great day.